Welcome to Behind the Headlines, your daily fix of the biggest stories that we've been covering. Tonight, we're expecting fireworks across the UK and across the pond. We'll have the latest from our US reporter. We're looking at the issue of assisted dying and lowering the screening age for prostate cancer. And there's no rest for controversial topics here. Yesterday, we were talking about early Christmas decorations. Today, we're talking about wearing your PJs to the shops. My name's Louise Easton. I'm going to be your host over the next 10 minutes or so on Tuesday, the 5th of November 2024. Right, let's get straight to the States, where voting is well and truly underway in the race for the White House. Donald Trump and Kamala Harris are neck and neck in the opinion polls, with the result returning a first for both sides. It's either going to be America's first female president or the first convicted criminal to be elected to the Oval Office. Our chief reporter James Gould has been following the campaign trail for the last week and is now at a polling station for us in Wisconsin.
Yes, there's been a steady stream of people coming and going today. The voting station that I'm at is a church in the suburbs of the Wisconsin state capital. Look, at the minute, I think it's almost cathartic for some people. They know that once they cast their vote, that's it. The months of fierce campaigning and rallies from each candidate all over. This station that I'm at doesn't close until 8 p.m. USA time, so there's still lots of votes to go.
More than 82 million people have voted early. So James, just explain, how does Election Day differ to here?
Okay, so there are some differences and similarities. Early voting is a thing in the States. That's logistical. That's to stop big lines on Election Day. Both the US and UK have poll workers or election officials who oversee the voting process and assist voters. Voter identification requirements vary by state, with some states needing photo ID and others not. Voting machines are used here, including optical scan machines, direct recording electronic machines, and touchscreen voting systems. That's something we don't see in the UK.
And with so many people voting, how long is this whole process going to take?
So for those early votes that have been cast in the last few weeks, the counting on them started this morning. Each state has a different time when their polls close, but for some, it's a pretty quick process once that voting is over. Results for a state can sometimes come within an hour, but for swing states like here in Wisconsin, it can take a number of hours, and sometimes even longer to be official. For you in the UK, I would imagine it will be Wednesday afternoon before you get a clear picture. Here in the US, we may be able to see who the president is at least come the early hours of the morning.
Okay, thanks, James. I'll let you get back to it. Now, over the past few nights, or maybe weeks, depending on where you are, as the sun sets, the skies may well be filled with loud bangs and colourful explosions. But one woman from Lincolnshire has been at Downing Street today with the signatures of 1 million people calling for tighter restrictions on fireworks. Julie Dawn, who's a retired mum of five, is calling for an urgent review to safeguard people, animals and pets from injury and distress. Our reporter Charlotte Lineker has been speaking to her.
I think people are getting to the point where they've really had enough now. So I started this because somebody else had a problem, and a friend of mine had a mare that aborted its foal, very late stages. It was awful. So I just thought I need to do something. So I started a petition, and I say we went on from there, and we've had five debates in Parliament now. This petition won't actually provoke a debate, but I'm hoping that we'll have enough public awareness from it, maybe enough publicity to try and get other people sort of aware of what can happen, really, using fireworks so much. There's just, I think since the millennium, firework use has gone completely out of control. They're using fireworks for all sorts of ridiculous things now. Or government guidelines is only advice. And they say, Don't use them near animals, don't use them near farms, but it's only advice. And it says, if you live close, well, how close is close?
Obviously, some people would say that they are seen almost as sort of a necessity, particularly bonfire night, as sort of, you know, this comes about. But I suppose for yourself, obviously, you don't feel that's the case.
The bonfire night, that's fine. You always expected fireworks and bonfire night, and you always expected them if it was in midweek, the weekend before and the weekend after. We always used to say, oh, it's going to be bonfire night in the middle of the week. Make sure you keep the dog in. Don't let the cats out, blah, blah. But now you can't do that because it isn't just on the event. It isn't just around bonfire night. it just gets, it's lunacy. It's absolute lunacy.
Well, Julie highlighted the impact fireworks can have on animals. And new research reveals more than a quarter of guide dogs in particular have a negative reaction to them, which in turn affects the lives and independence of their owners. Our reporter Tom Priest has this report.
Yes, 26% of guide dog owners report their dogs show signs of fear and distress, like trembling, pacing, panting or barking when fireworks go off. And some dogs won't even go out after dark around this time of year due to anxiety fireworks cause. Amanda Baker from Flintshire in North Wales is partially sighted and relies on her guide dog, Eddie.
I get really upset about it because I worry about him. I worry that his heart's racing that much and he's that stressed. Is he going to have a heart attack? Is he going to have a stroke? It's awful. And I don't mind sitting with him all night. That's not a problem. But there's nothing I can do to actually take this fear away.
Owners are encouraging people to attend organised local displays to allow guide dog users to be prepared.
Well, one place which is hosting the UK's biggest November the 5th event tonight is Lewes in East Sussex. Thousands, many with flaming torches, are parading through the town's streets. But it's prompted police to urge people not to travel to the area with road closures in place and trains not calling at a number of nearby stations from 5 p.m. Our reporter Katie Ahern explains.
Well, with over 25,000 people expected in the historic market town's narrow streets, it's not surprising there's overcrowding concerns. Police say there's been over 200 injuries reported at the event since 2019, many along the route of the iconic processions. There's also been arrests for assault and criminal damage. Lewes Borough Bonfire Society told us they fully support the police in ensuring the safety of the participants and public.
Police in Plymouth are hunting two men as part of a murder investigation. A 36-year-old local man was pronounced dead in the city yesterday afternoon after reports of a stabbing. Our chief reporter Andrew Kay is at the Cambridge Road cordon for us.
In front of me there's road closures, lots of officers and police cars, and the cordon tape itself actually attaches to a primary school, and all day I've been listening to children playing while investigations continue just outside the school gates. Emma lives nearby.
I think seeing the number of police cars, it is quite frightening, isn't it?
And these people have also been surprised to find a huge police presence on their doorstep, which I'm told will continue for some time.
Well, I saw it last night, I was quite concerned.
Come out of the shop and there was a police car here.
It's crazy, isn't it? A lot of police cars.
Yeah, it's a bit scary.
I'm actually standing close to where the separate Keyham shootings took place back in 2021 when the gunman Jake Davison killed five people before himself. Janet Baskerville lives near to where yesterday's incident happened. She says today has been a difficult day for the community.
What, three streets away? And this one's right behind the school here. Devastating, absolutely devastating.
David Wright is a former police chaplain. He's been doing what he can for his community here.
We have a group of us go around and pray through the this particular area, which started after the Keyham killing several years ago.
Inspector Dom Nichols has this message of reassurance.
I believe we've identified the two people involved in the incident who we want to try and locate, and there's no wider threat or concern for the local community.
And he says police patrols to reassure people in this area will continue for some time.
You're listening to Behind the Headlines. The latest now on a bid to change the law on assisted dying in Scotland. Members of the Scottish Parliament have been hearing from officials in Australia on how similar legislation has been introduced in several states. Our Scotland political editor Alan Smith was watching and joins me now. Alan, what was said?
Well, we heard from two experts from the Australian state of Victoria, where the law on assisted dying was introduced 5 years ago. They faced questions about how it all works and what lessons Scotland could learn as it mulls over becoming the first part of the UK to do this. Now, there have been concerns here about vulnerable people being pressured into ending their lives because they're seen as a burden. But what these officials told MSPs is that the opposite was true.
We have not had in the 5 years in Victoria any reports of that nature. The only reports we have had have been the reverse, and that is where people have experienced coercion, maybe that's too strong a word, but undue influence not to go ahead with it, generally from relatives.
That's Julian Gardner, the chair of the Voluntary Assisted Dying Review Board in Victoria. We also heard how just 0.8% of the population there has taken up the option and how there were no plans to expand the eligibility beyond terminally ill adults.
And what sort of reaction has there been to this?
Yeah, I did speak to someone from the group Dignity and Dying who was in the room watching the session, and they were pleased. They believe it shows the law is working as it was intended in Australia. We haven't heard from the other side of the debate, but there is still such a long way to go. This was the first of the oral evidence sessions. There are 8 weeks of this, and we'll hear from opponents who believe the focus should instead be on improving palliative care, that end-of-life care. We'll also hear from religious and faith groups, as well as the Lib Dem MSP behind the plans, Liam MacArthur.
OK, thanks, Alan. So Chris Hoy wants the age at which men can be tested for prostate cancer to be lowered. The cycling legend, whose cancer is terminal, wants men with a family history of the disease tested sooner. Our reporter Liam Ross has been finding out about the impact of Hoy's plea and whether it'll bring any change.
The six-time Olympic champion's issuing a powerful call for more men to be screened for prostate cancer. He feels men should be able to get a test when they are younger without any barriers. Diagnosed with the disease in 2014, David Gardner managed to receive treatment. He tells us about the impact of Hoy's remarks.
I found it very, very heartwarming and very, very brave of the man to come out and not only discuss the fact he's got prostate cancer, but he went over the background as to how he discovered it, what his progress has been to date, the treatment he's endured.
Now, Westminster Health Secretary Wes Streeting says the NHS in England will consider lowering the age men can ask for a test. We asked his Scottish counterpart, Neil Gray, what they're doing in Hoy's homeland.
We will obviously take heed of what he is telling us in terms of his story and the ask that he has made, and I'm going to be writing to the UK Screening Committee asking them to carry out a review as to the evidence that is there around the likes of the PSA test, the blood test.
Prostate Cancer UK say 1 in 8 men will get the disease. You can find more information at their website.
And if you've ever nipped the shops or out on the school run in your pyjamas, then it turns out you're certainly not alone. In fact, a new study has found a third of us own a pair of pyjamas specifically to wear outside, with nearly half of those surveyed admitting they'll nip out in the car or even do some gardening in them. We've been asking people in Merseyside what they make of it all.
I would not go outside in pyjamas at all. No, thank you.
Why not?
Because people are getting out of bed and then, oh no.
Now you need to keep up standards.
You can go out in your PJs, not during the day though, not in town, in your little sliders. I say pop out to the shop, yeah, PJs, but other than that, get dressed.
Well, for more on these stories, head to the news pages of our website or check out our social media channels, and be sure to come back again tomorrow when we'll continue to take you behind the headlines.